everyone, and welcome to today's 2016 Medicare Advantage PCP Incentive Program, Claims Capture Clinical Measure Compliance. I am going to turn the program over to Leslie Bolte in a second here, and I do want to remind everyone we have the phones muted on our end, and we are recording today's session as well. So if you have a question, give us your name and the practice of the facility that you represent, and also be aware that your voice will be recorded for future reference. And this recording, along with a copy, a PDF copy of the presentation, will be available in the Provider Resource Center. So at this time, I am now going to turn the program over to Leslie. Leslie?
Hey, thank you, Rod. And thank you very much to all that are participating on the call. By way of introduction, my name is Leslie Bolte. I am a senior program manager within the Government Quality Improvement Organization. And on behalf of Highmark, thank you very much for participating. What I think is the target audience here is the biller and coders from the provider practices. I wanted to take time to give you an overview of the 2016 Medicare Advantage PCP incentive program, because you do play a very vital role in providing the documentation that supports numerator compliance and measure compliance for our members. So I wanted to have the opportunity to share with you what the significance of the program and what it means to your practices, as well as what it means to the health plan. So on slide two, the intent of our program is to facilitate accountability across Highmark's provider network and to improve the quality care for our Medicare Advantage population through enhanced collaboration and claims data sharing. Additionally, we do believe that our provider network is very strong and that a lot of the measures that we are measured against are being completed, but it is the documentation piece that we must rely on. It must be captured in a way that is acceptable to CMS, and that Highmark can demonstrate to CMS that these activities have been done. Hence the reason that we'd like to have programs like this so that we can share those aspects with you. As a reminder, this applies to Highmark's Medicare Advantage population only. And the Medicare Advantage products do include members who are 65 years and older, and also patients of all ages that have disabilities. Slide three shows the Medicare Advantage incentive measure set, and these are the measures that are included within our incentive program. There are a total of 16 measures, actually 17 when you count annual wellness, but I'm going to read to you what they are. There's the annual wellness visit, breast cancer screening, colorectal cancer screening, adult BMI assessment, osteoporosis management in women with fracture, comprehensive diabetes care, retinal eye exam, diabetes comprehensive care, kidney disease monitoring, rheumatoid arthritis management, statin therapy for patients with cardiovascular disease, and statin therapy for diabetics, as well as medication therapy management. And those are considered what we call static measures, and I'll explain that to you in a little bit. But also we have dynamic measures, which are diabetes care, blood sugar control, plan all-cause readmission, medication adherence for diabetes medications, hypertension, medications, cholesterol medications, and the medication management for patients with persistent asthma. We do have annual wellness visit reflected here on our measure set. Annual wellness visit, as you probably know, is not a CMS measure. It is not a Medicare measure. However, we do use it in this program to support what we term a multiplier, which allows the physician practices to receive additional percentages of payment at a per-member rate based upon their compliance level in the reporting of annual wellness visits. On slide four, there are two different components to the incentive program. One is termed the care gap closure component. It is where the providers do receive an incentive in the amount of $10 for the 11 what we term static measures. Static means that once care is provided to these members and reported to us via claims, then that documentation serves to close that care gap. It shows a member is compliant. And each time that occurs throughout the measurement year, the provider is eligible to receive $10 on that gap closure effort. That is for, we do limit the payment of static care gaps based upon dates of service for the measurement year. For the 2016 program, that date is defined as January 1st, 2016 through December 31st, 2016. So activities that are completed during that time and reported to us via claims are indeed captured in our methodology, and we issue quarterly payments based upon that. In addition, those are paid at $10 apiece, except for osteoporosis management, which is paid out at $100 per gap closure. Additionally, there are annual wellness visits that are conducted via their practices, EMRs, and other sources, but when it is done via the tool called Vatica, the practices are eligible for a $200 gap closure incentive once we receive the documentation appropriately that has been completed. In addition, there is a year-end performance score that goes across, counts for all of these measures and all of the performance on these measures for that measurement period of time. And once practice reaches a level of 3.5 across all 16 star measures, they are eligible for what we call as the performance level incentive. And so that does include a general member compliance. So in saying that, there are some measures that have look-back periods that are beyond this particular measurement year. For example, BMI does have a look-back period for this measurement year and the prior measurement year. So if a member had a BMI reported to us appropriately via the appropriate diagnosis code in 2015, that does carry over to the results for the 2016 year-end results. Our results are calculated in April of 2017. We do that to allow for a 60-day claims run-out period that count starts on January 31st, 2017. We do assume that there are members that are being seen in December, and as those services, those claims reach us, they need to be processed. So we do allow for that start of that 60-day period to be January 31st, knowing that you do have to capture dates of service in 2016 and 17 due to when the patients come and see you. Again, there is a calculation within this performance level payment that on annual wellness visit completion rates for the practices membership. And if it reaches a certain level, there is a multiplier applied. So it can be beneficial to make sure you are coding and capturing annual wellness visits correctly. On to slide 5, and this is going to show you a little bit about the annual wellness visit multiplier. Again, the practices do receive $10 static payment for the completion of an annual wellness visit. But at the year end, if they have completed annual wellness visits on 50% of their membership, they get a 20% kicker or an increase in the amount of money that is paid out per member. And then if they reach 75% compliance, they get a 50% increase in the payment that is made to that practice based upon the membership. Additionally, if it is done via the Vatica tool, they'll get the $200 gap closure payment for each member that has annual wellness visit done through the Vatica tool. But at the year end, if they 30% of the population has their annual wellness visit done through the Vatica tool, they'll get a 25% kicker applied on top of whatever they have earned per member. And if they get 60%, they'll get a 60% multiplier applied to that level of scoring. And to give you a sense of what that kind of looks like for a practice, say a practice on slide 6, say a practice warranted a 5-level star performance on all of the measures, they would be eligible for $150 per member per Medicare Advantage member that they have in their practice. But if, in addition, they had completed 50% of the annual wellness visits on that membership, they would receive $180 as opposed to the $150. So it does go up. It, again, if they did 75%, they would be eligible for $225 per member as opposed to the $150. And if they used that, it could toll. If they had 30% of the membership done, they would get $187.50 per member as opposed to the $150. So how this all works is that there is each measure is independently scored against the performance thresholds. So an example, CO1 is breast cancer screening, and say the practice has 70% compliance. Their attributed membership has a 70% compliance rate. That may work out to be a 3-star performance. The breast cancer is a one-weighted measure, so you would take the 3-star, the 3 that was earned, and the 1 weight, and that would give you a result as of the 3-weighted stars based upon that measure performance. And you would go through all of the measures in the program and come up with what the weighted stars are. So then you would have your weighted stars, and you would divide it by the weight of the number of measures that were eligible for scoring, and that would give you your star rating. And I say it that way because if your practice has less than 10 members in a denominator for a measure, that measure is removed from scoring. It's kind of out of fairness to that practice that we decided to do that because, one patient being noncompliant can really throw you off significantly if you have less than 10 in the denominator. So that is the formula that we use to apply. I wanted to make that clear. So there are some of the measures in the measure program on slide 8 that have coding considerations that allow for enhanced documentation and have some benefit factor impacts. So wanted to make sure that we shared this with you. Our goal ultimately is to also make sure that the care that we provide to our members is affordable, so that we do want to make sure that, having preventive screenings does not hinder their ability to receive other health care needs that they may have, including, getting their prescriptions filled. So there are certain ways to code things to make sure that they do hit their benefits in full, so we just really wanted to call those out. An example, on slide 9, breast cancer screening, this measure is the percentage of female members 50 to 74 years of age who had a mammogram to screen for breast cancer. This member can have that mammogram any time during the measurement period or 15 months prior to the measurement period, and they are considered numerator compliant. There are some exclusion factors that do apply to this measure, and there are methods by which the practice can communicate to us that these members have had an exclusionary event via the clinical quality feedback loop tool that we have stood up. But the most important thing that I wanted to share with this population was that there is, Medicare Advantage does denote screening mammograms as a covered and full benefit. It is has a limit of 1 screening every 12 months. But we really do need to make sure that they are coded as screening mammograms as opposed to diagnostic mammograms, because then that would not be the benefit for them. So you want to make sure that we can provide care. When it truly is a screening, we do want to be able to make sure it is a covered benefit for those members. So, please do try to make sure you pay attention whenever you're coding these, that they are applied as a screening mammogram. Of course, obviously, if it's truly a screening mammogram. Going on to colorectal cancer screening, which is on slide 11. This measures the percentage of members 50 to 75 years of age who had appropriate screening for colorectal cancer. Wanted to point out that there are multiple ways to which a practice can demonstrate numerator compliance for this. One of those, though, is known as fecal occult blood testing. We often do promote the use of what we call FIT kits. To have, as a screening tool. We do recognize that colonoscopy is the gold standard, and we, obviously have a preference to have our members have colonoscopies, but there may be a fear factor or something that may prevent a member from selecting that. In that case, there are fecal occult blood testing kits. We do want to point out that there is a 2 per year coverage of this. So, do not hold back submitting the FIT kit results to us or the fact that you have tested that way. It is eligible to be paid twice a year. I say it that way because Highmark independently has often reached out to our membership and offered FIT kit testing to them in certain pockets of our network. We offer it to all, but certain pockets do take us up on it. So if you're worried that your practice may not get paid for it because Highmark may have reached out or someone else may have reached out to this member, it is a covered benefit twice a year. So you don't have to worry about the timing of it. Did want to point out, though, that when you do FIT kit testing, it is an annual coverage for us. So it doesn't make a difference if they had that test in November of last year. If you're seeing them early on in the measurement year or in this measurement year, you can go ahead and go down that path again. So we have heard that we've had some providers put a hold on submitting these to us because they're worried about the time. And just wanted to clear up that this is twice, it can be covered twice a year. Again, if there are colonoscopies or sigmoidoscopies done, please do distinguish between screening and diagnostic testing. The screening is covered is a covered and full benefit for our Medicare Advantage members, whereas diagnostic testing may not be. On to slide 13, if this is adult BMI. This is the percentage of members 18 to 74 years of age who had an outpatient visit and whose body mass index was documented during the measurement year or the year prior to the measurement year. Wanted to point out that, we historically do very well on this, but the five-star threshold for this measure is 97% compliance. So we do encourage that when you do see a member that this is coded upon visit, to assure that we are capturing that data. As a reminder, height and weight alone are not numerator compliant values. The compliance requires that a BMI is calculated and documented within the medical record, and that BMI can be reported to us via ICD-9, depending upon if it was done last year before October, or an ICD-10 code. Wanted to point out additionally, that if you have members that are younger than 21 that are Medicare Advantage members, and that may be, but pretty much across the board for all of our pay-for-value programs, if you do have members younger than 21 years of age on the date that the BMI was calculated, the BMI must be reported with appropriate percentile ICD-10 code. On slide 14, I did give you what the ICD-10 codes are for the specific BMI value. Do want to point out that coding to the highest level of specificity is required. If you see a result, it must match the appropriate ICD-10 code that is reflective of that result. And again, that result does need to be secured within the medical record of your practice. This chart is available in the program manual that will be posted to the PRC, so I don't have to hurt your eyes trying to find it, but just wanted to point out, though, that it is a very specific relationship between the BMI value and the appropriate ICD-10 code. C12, which is on slide 15, is osteoporosis management in women who had a fracture. This is the percentage of female members 67 to 85 years of age who suffered a fracture and had either a bone marrow density test or a prescription for a drug to treat or prevent osteoporosis in the 6 months after a fracture. The most important message here that I can share with you is on slide 16. We do have some reporting available that we do release at a practice level on the user interface. There are ad hoc osteoporosis management reports that are available that are showing the claims data that has been submitted to Highmark that has pulled members into the denominator. Additionally, we actually have created an ad hoc suspicious diagnosis report on osteoporosis management fractures, because we are seeing that there are often members that are coded as acute fractures when indeed they look suspicious to us because we have not received any claims with information that indicates an x-ray has been done or that the expected follow-up care has been done if this was truly an acute fracture. So we have posted these reports at the practice level so that the clinicians can look and see if maybe we just don't have all the claims information in or, a claim hasn't come through cleanly that has depicted that indeed the expected follow-up care or x-ray had been done. But we do want to remind you, and on slide 17 we do reflect that it is very key that the coding is appropriate on members that have fractures, and as well as those that had a history of a fracture. So we have put together just a little bit of educational food for thought slide here that says, there are distinct codes that indicate personal history of healed or other pathological fractures, of healed stress factors, of healed traumatic fractures, and there's also ICD-10 category codes that reflect aftercare following a fracture that, we are expecting to see as opposed to acute fracture codes. So just want to, have you pay a little attention to that. It does make a really big difference to these practices. We are seeing that, if there are inappropriate people in the denominator, then clearly they're not going to have the numerator compliance data. And we do see some codes carry over from year to year, or some members that have multiple fractures during the course of the year tend to make us think that there's something suspicious about it. There is a claims correction process in case the practices do identify that these claims that are coming to us are flawed. However, the most, the best practice is to make sure that we are adequately coding up front whenever we see these members. C13, which is on slide 18, is comprehensive diabetes eye care, eye exam, retinal. This is identifies adult diabetic members who receive eye screening for diabetic retinal eye disease. Again, this does include all of our diabetic members. There are certain visit codes that do get a member into this deemed to be a diabetic. One of those is if they had one acute inpatient setting with the diagnosis of diabetes, that does pull the person into the denominator and will keep them there. And so we do ask that, as you're coding and you see that a member may be on an insulin drip, that, we do take care to make sure that they are not on that insulin drip unrelated to their diabetes. We do know that it is standard of practice to put patients after open heart surgery on insulin drips to maintain a certain blood sugar, and there are other scenarios where they may be placed on medications while they're in the hospital. That does not mean that they're a diabetic. So we do really would like, some focus on making sure that we aren't mislabeling our practices or our patients. It's a diagnosis that would carry over with those members for a long period of time, and in truth, it's probably not fair to those members to have that diagnosis on. So we are, again, releasing suspicious diagnosis reports that do show why our members are being labeled as a diabetic. And right or wrong, they may truly be diabetics. I'm just pointing out that report does show some suspicious data that, we only see one claim that has that member as a diabetic. They haven't been a diabetic in the past couple years. They aren't on any diabetic medications. In the outpatient setting, they have had no outpatient visit that indicates that they are diabetic. So we're asking again for the clinicians to look and say, hey, this member truly isn't a diabetic, and where did this claim come from, and can we get this claim corrected? So I wanted to bring that out. Additionally, on the eye exam portion of this measure, we realize that the PCPs are not the providers of care as far as retinal eye exam on a normal basis. While there is some technology that is out there that may help that be done in a more PCP office setting, at this time we do know that this is most predominantly done by the ophthalmologist and optometrist in a referral basis. The practices do get or should get a copy of those reports, and so we are asking that you report that the member indeed has had a completed retinal eye exam within the year by applying a CPT-2 code onto an office visit for the 2016 year that tells us that the member did have a retinal eye exam. And I have listed on slide 19 what those CPT-2 codes are. There's a 2022F that says dilated retinal eye exam with interpretation by an optometrist or ophthalmologist documented and reviewed. A 2024F, which is a seventh field photo with interpretation by an ophthalmologist or optometrist documented and reviewed. And 2026F, an eye image validated to match diagnosis from seven standard field photo results. Those are for tests that are completed during this year. As you get those reports in, it is a reportable CPT-2 code. So we would encourage you to go ahead and place them on the on your office visits, just reporting out that you indeed have had a result. Our CPT-2 codes, I'm sure you are aware, have no monetary value. They are for quality reporting only. So you are reporting to the plan that this patient has indeed had this procedure done. If you've had members that have had results in 2015 and they have been negative results that show that the member is low risk for retinopathy and the PCP does not believe the provider the member needs to have another retinal eye exam during this measurement year, they can report to us 3072F. It needs to be on a claim from 2016 that says this member is low risk for retinopathy. There's no evidence of retinopathy in the prior year. And that can only be applied if the member did have a negative eye exam last year. In all instances of reporting CPT-2 codes, you do need to maintain that report that shows that the member did have a diabetic retinal eye exam within your medical record. And I'm sure you're aware that anything that you report and claim, you need to be able to substantiate in the medical record of that member, but just as an added emphasis since this is a unique situation. Some of our best practices, just to call this out because this is helpful to know that as you know, you do referrals for ophthalmologist appointments for your members, that you do indicate, please do send a report back to you so that you can have it on your medical record and report one of these codes. On slide 20, comprehensive diabetes care, HbA1c control, less than 9. There's a percentage of members 18 to 75 years of age with diabetes type 1 or 2 whose most recent HbA1c is less than 9. I do want to emphasize, or less than or equal to 9, I do want to emphasize that this is a measurement of the last result of the measurement year. It doesn't mean that this was only ordered in your PCP office. It can be results that were done in a hospital or in a specialist office. The test may have been ordered somewhere else. Again, we are asking that you do report the CPT-2 code on a claim. There are some restrictions around reporting this, so I do want to call this out, that HEDIS has released special language that you're probably well aware of, but I'm going to call it that anyway. The service date for the Category 2 code and the test result must follow the requirements outlined in General Guideline 36. That guideline does say that the date of service for the CPT-2 code and the test result must be no more than 7 days apart, which means that whenever you are putting a CPT-2 code on a test result, on a claim to reflect the test result that it must, you must indicate the date of service that the test was done as the date of service that you are reporting the CPT-2 code. If it's greater than 7 days, it will not match, so you can't really hold the CPT-2 code and use it on an office claim when the office claim is going to be in a month after the lab result has been provided to you. So we do encourage the use of what we call $0 claims to go ahead and report the CPT-2 code upon receipt of the lab result. For a $0 claim to be captured in Highmark's system, you do have to put a diagnosis code on the claim, and the claim line must reflect the CPT-2 code. It is a $0 claim. You cannot attach a monetary value to any of the CPT-2 codes. They have no monetary value, not even putting a penny. They must be $0. Okay, just looking at slide 21 to see if there was anything I needed to point out. I just want to emphasize again the determinant of whether or not a member is compliant on this is based upon the last result received. If we do not, if a lab test is done and it is not resulted to us, it is considered non-compliant by CMS. Therefore, we do issue reports on a monthly basis. We're going to release these that will show you which HbA1c's, who's in the denominator. Have they had an HbA1c test? Yes, no. If the answer is yes, meaning that Highmark is in possession of a claim that indicates an HbA1c has been drawn, the next column will say, is it resulted to Highmark? And it will say yes, no. It will show you, additionally, if it was resulted, what that result was, so that you can follow along and use that to manage the patient. Again, this is a measurement of control. So if a member has a greater than 9 HbA1c, which would indicate not out-of-control values, then want to really follow up with them and make sure they're taking their medication, don't need any other adjustments, that they're following their dietary regimen, and put them in a care management type of a program. The goal, again, is to get your membership to a less than 9 result. And I do want to indicate that there are multiple measures on HbA1c control, and we are watching them fall. Less than 8 is required to be reported for Medicaid. We do anticipate that this will also adjust for the Medicare Advantage population. It already is a HEDIS measure as far as less than 8 is concerned as well. So. C17 is disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drug therapy for rheumatoid arthritis. These are percentage of members who were diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis who were dispensed at least one ambulatory prescription for disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drugs. Again, to get into this denominator, you have to have two visits by which the diagnosis of rheumatoid arthritis is applied. And they can be with two different dates of service. It needs to be between day one of the measurement year and 30 days prior to the end of the measurement year to be included. Those can be outpatient visits, non-acute inpatient discharges as well. I do want to point out that we have done some statistics on this or some runouts of this data, and we do have a lot of members that have only had the rheumatoid arthritis coded once within their medical record. And, if that's the only time that was ever addressed in your practice, then that's appropriate. However, if they have had other visits where there has been some attention paid to their tolerance of their DMARDs, just wanted to keep that in mind, that unless there are two, they are not being included in the denominator. So we are seeing a lot of members that are on DMARDs that are not reflected in this denominator, and so our assumption, because they are on DMARDs, is that they are rheumatoid arthritis members. So just wanted to keep that in mind. If they come in for another visit where they are, and you are indeed addressing you know, their tolerance of medications or, you know, how they're dealing with the rheumatoid arthritis, you know, that should be something that is captured. Again, this is a population where we are seeing that there are members in this denominator where we are getting a lot of feedback from the provider network that this patient really doesn't have RA, that they have osteoarthritis, or they were just screening, or it was a family history of arthritis. So we do want to point out that we are seeing some cases where we have seen these like diagnoses on these members, but they have been coded enough to as rheumatoid arthritis patients that they are being pulled into the denominator. So again, you know, caution to the wind to make sure that we're not just carrying over diagnosis codes that we see someplace else, that there is truly a diagnosis of rheumatoid arthritis made, and that, you know, that it is appropriate. Again, we have put out suspicious diagnosis reports to allow you to see who is in the denominator and how they got in there. So we do suggest that, you know, your practices take a look at that. They will come out in April, July, and October of 2016 again. We did put them out towards the end of the year this year. In 2015, but we will be putting them out again in 2016, to give you some insight. The last measure that I really wanted to cover, and I'm going to cover this in somewhat detail, it starts on slide 24. It is not a CMS measure. This is annual wellness and initial preventive physical exam rate. This is the measure that is used to determine the multiplier. For the program year, so it can have a significant increase in the incentive payment for your practices. I want to make sure that we have a clear understanding of the annual wellness visit and how to code it. We do know that all of our Medicare Advantage members are eligible for annual wellness visits. However, this is a measurement of members 65 years of age and older at the end of the measurement year who have had an annual wellness visit. So let's just go to slide 25 and talk through the appropriate coding. The correct HCPCS code for annual wellness visits is there are three available codes that are considered numerator compliant for this measure. There is code G0438, which is the initial annual wellness visit. Wanted to point out that the G0438, a little miss thing on my part, is a once-in-a-lifetime benefit. A member can only have one original, one-time initial annual wellness visit. Highmark does cover this on a calendar year benefit for our members. So it makes no difference if they have had an initial preventive physical exam sometime last year and it hasn't been 12 months since that has been conducted. We do want to make sure that is understood. This is a Highmark coverage only. It is correct to say that Medicare is very strict on 12 months prior, or 12 months between these types of visits. However, Highmark does cover this as a calendar year benefit. So for Highmark members, Medicare Advantage members, that does not make a difference. I know that that's hard sometimes in your practices because you're just trying to, you know, you have multiple insurances and whatever, but we wanted to make sure that you understood that. So once a member has had an initial annual wellness visit, you're to code G0439, which is the subsequent annual wellness visit. That is a annual completion of an annual wellness visit. There are no limits to how many years that subsequent annual wellness visit is done. Highmark does cover this as an every calendar year benefit to our members, so there is no copay, and we do pay our providers for providing the service. Additionally, G0402 is initial preventive physical exam. It is known as the Welcome to Medicare Preventive Visit. This is a once per beneficiary lifetime coverage. It is to be conducted within the first 12 months of the member's effective date of coverage for their Medicare Part B. Coinsurance, copayments, and Medicare Part B deductibles are waived for these visits, but I do want to remind you that Medicare has very specific guidelines that must be followed about what occurs during these visits. So if we go to slide 26, the specific guidelines are is that if you have an annual wellness visit, all copays are waived for that particular visit. However, if you are conducting another service during those visits, the members must be held to the copays for those additional treatments. So, for example, if a member comes in and for their annual wellness visit and reports something to you that you feel that the member needs to have an EKG, it's just an example, and you feel it's medically necessary to do that, you can go ahead and do the EKG and report it with a modifier 59, but the beneficiary is going to be required to pay any copays associated with that test. Additionally, if they come in and you're having an annual wellness visit and they report a problem and you complete a problem visit on top of the annual wellness visit, the beneficiary must be held to the copays and coinsurance and deductibles that are associated with that problem part of the visit. So I wanted to make sure we were clear on that. On slide 27, just to try to sum this in a little different way, again, for an annual wellness visit for numerator compliance and for the calculation of the completion rate on the members within your practice, you can apply GO-402 for the initial preventive physical exam if that member is new to Medicare, which means within 12 months of their Medicare Part D benefit kickoff. Also, if the patient is new to Medicare, after those 12 months or after that initial IPPE has been done, you can go ahead and complete an annual wellness visit, initial visit. And then every year following that patient as your member, you can do a subsequent annual wellness visit. I do want to point out that we are aware that you may not be aware if a member has had an IPPE or an annual wellness visit in the past. If you don't know, you can certainly, ask us to, or look them up in our system to see if you can go ahead and do the IPPE. But it is not necessary to do an IPPE before you do an annual wellness visit. It's not necessary to do an annual wellness before you do an annual wellness subsequential visit. It's just it's the payment and the money associated to the physician that there are different rates. Okay. So again, I did put some language in here. It says that it may be appropriate to perform an evaluation and management visit, codes 99201 through 99215 in an annual wellness visit on the same day. And as these services do contain different elements, just a reminder that a separate note is needed to support each service rendered. So whenever you're applying a modifier 25, the patient's medical record must clearly document that separate identifiable medical care has been rendered to support both of those codes. I do want to point out a compliance alert. I was asked to report that the billing of a preventable medicine visit, those are codes 99381 and 99397, and an annual wellness visit together may not be appropriate on the same day as there is significant overlap in the elements of these two services, and Highmark may not pay you if you apply both of these on the same day. So if you are doing an annual physical exam and you are doing an annual wellness visit, you will need to take the physical exam from 99201 through the 99215 E&M codes as opposed to using the preventive medication visits. Annual wellness visit and subsequent annual wellness visits are considered preventive medicine codes. You cannot apply two preventive medicine codes on the same day that are the same. wanted to share with you what you can do as well, though. There are many things that are done during an annual wellness visit and an IPP e-visit that are not considered part of the annual wellness visit billing components. So the slide 28 is showing some of those, like smoking cessation, annual alcohol screening, alcohol counseling, cardiovascular disease therapy testing, obesity counseling, you know, the colorectal FIT kit annual test, and AAA scans. And I do want to point out, though, that there is annual depression screening, and I believe we called this out last year, but I want to make sure. Annual depression screening is considered part of the initial annual wellness visit. Therefore, you should not be coding the GO444 at the same time as the annual wellness visit. The initial visit, you can bill it, however, with the subsequent visit. You just cannot bill it with the initial. So I wanted to point that out. And, Rob, I'll take any questions.
Okay. Thanks, Leslie. And, everybody, if anyone does have a question, do a *6 to unlock your line. Double-check, make sure you're not on mute as well. And then give us your name and the practice and or the facility that you represent. So we are now open for questions. Are there any questions for Leslie?
Hi, my name is Mary Beth.
Hi, Mary Beth. Go ahead.
I have a question. How do I get the Vatica tool?
Hey, Mary Beth, if you can let us know what practice you're from, we can send some support, or you know, let our CPC teams, our clinical transformation technologists, and our risk revenue area know.
Okay, it's Dr. Steven Jadich at Horizon Medical Corporation. And a second question, how do you document the medication management therapy?
Oh, the medication management therapy. Okay, that is the completion of a comprehensive medication review. So that is completed. So the ask on the medication therapy management is not that you document to us that you've completed a comprehensive medication review. It is that you have encouraged your members to respond to a letter of outreach that they will get from Highmark to join the medication therapy management program and either participate in a comprehensive medication review or opt out so that we can have that on record. We do have to... the program is an approval that is required by CMS. This is a CMS program. So at the current time when Highmark submitted their program to CMS back in July, we did have to indicate how we were going to complete the MTM program. And at that time, we had elected to go with a vendor. So there is a company called PharmMD that will be conducting the outreach, but we are encouraging the support of the provider community.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, thanks for that question. Do we have any other questions? Do *6 unlock your line and then mute your phone.
Hi, we have a question.
Sure, go ahead.
If a member sends a fit kit back to Highmark, how do we know when those results or where do those results go so that the PCP can also see them?
So Highmark doesn't send the fit kits themselves. So, you know, we contract to have them sent out by, I think it's Quest Diagnostics. And Quest Diagnostics should be issuing reports directly to the PCP. If you have one that you you believe that we have conducted or Quest had sent out that you haven't got a result on, if you could please let your CTC or PR rep know and we'll follow up.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, that was a requirement that they do actively report back to the PCP. Results don't come to Highmark.
Okay.
You know what I mean. Yeah, the reports don't. Yep.
Thanks.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Hi, I have a question about the eVatica tool. My name is Lisa from the Hines Veterinary Health Center, and we had contacted our provider services rep about that after our last webinar. And he said that he thought it was only available to practices with 100 Highmark members or more.
Um, That may be correct, and I can find that out. I am unaware of your membership, and I think that rationale is that it may not be worth it for you to switch your tools at that point. But there still is an incentive for regular annual wellness visits. That's pretty significant, just so you know. So it's not like there's not an incentive available. There still is a kicker for a regular annual wellness visit within the program. But, we'll take that back and look at it. But you were reached into by somebody from Highmark. They did respond to
that. Yeah, our representative is Randy Bowser.
Okay.
Hello, I have a question or a response. This is Andra from Heritage Valley Health System. I actually did call. I had a few of my patients that said that they had their fit kits completed through Highmark. And when I was I had called Quest for the results. They absolutely refused to send us the results. They said that was not their responsibility. And so I called Highmark back, and nobody knew who to send me to get these results because our physicians were requesting the results. So I'm not sure how to get the results at this point. Quest absolutely said no, they would not do it because the PCPs were not listed on the on the resulting, and so therefore they would not send them to us.
So can you do me a favor and drop an email? Can I ask, is your CTC, wait, I'm thinking of her name.
Emily.
Yes. Can you send her an email with that detail, and I'll follow up?
Sure.
Sure.
I will. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and
no,
I have one other.
Go
ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
This was a different about MTM.
Yeah, sure.
How are you going to report that? Is that going to be on the monthly STARS report, or are you going to send out a separate, like you do for the osteo, so that we could keep a real-time track of these patients that are enrolled?
We're thinking of doing both. So, originally we went out saying we'll put it on the monthly STARS reports.
Mm-hmm.
Just so you know, we could tell you, in an ad hoc basis, who's eligible pretty quickly. What we get from our vendor is a report that says who was eligible, but who has had it done and who has opted out. So we thought that information may be as important as well. So in the monthly STARS report, we will be showing you who is compliant and who has opted out so that you don't, just so you know, because you don't want to, reach out to people that have already done it, right?
Right, exactly.
But we may complement that with an ad hoc report that tells you eligibility just so we can tell you as soon as possible. Because you know how that goes. It takes some time to get the data all put together and out in a timely manner. So we are considering both.
Right, because our concern is we don't want to, as PCPs, we don't want to get hit as non-compliant when we don't even know who the patients are so that we can, assist you in outreaching them and encouraging them or, opting them out.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And, just so you know, there is pretty stringent eligibility criteria. So just wanted to point that out.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, they have to have 7 Part D medications. So, January, we're not going to see a lot of them. February, we may start to see more because they have to fill them first, right? Because this is completely based on
claims-based. Okay.
All claims-based. And it's all pharmacy claims-based. So if they don't fill those meds, so you'll see them pick up. They just haven't picked up yet, just so you know.
Okay. And one more last question. I apologize.
Yeah, go.
So in regards to correcting a claim for, say, somebody that's diabetic, because we've had quite a few that are not diabetics, and they've somehow they had a claim that they were. How do we just let our CTC know that, or is there a specific process?
So, yeah, it is a process. It's just kind of a standing Highmark process, so just so you know. Highmark's not allowed to change a claim, right? We can't change claims. The provider has to change claims. So
right.
What those reports show, if you get a chance, look at the practices. Suspicious diagnosis report. Not every practice has them because not everyone has what we deem as suspicious. Doesn't mean that list is comprehensive, right? Because, we use, safe logic, right? Really obvious stuff,
Right.
Fracture without an x-ray test is kind of obvious and no follow-up. you know, to that fracture. Those type of things are really obvious. Diabetes, to us, it's just highly suspicious that they had one inpatient that deemed them as a diabetic, but last year they were never a diabetic, and from that inpatient visit on, they have never been deemed a diabetic, right? So those things to us, they're not on diabetic medications either. So those to us are like highly suspicious. So that's what you see is like highly suspicious stuff, things that, you know, from claims logic, it just isn't making sense. So if you look at those reports, we do show you what claims were put forward to Highmark that had a diagnosis of diabetes and who put it in. So the first step is to look at those reports and say, I agree or I don't agree, right? If you agree that that's suspicious, we've shown you who that is. We're willing to help stimulate conversations between you and others, but we can't change them ourselves, right? Some of them, you'll be surprised, maybe from in your practice, and they may be from in your health system, right? So we want you to take a look at that first. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand all that. It's just, so then do they do a so that the one that made the claim has to retract that claim, is
correct.
What I'm saying, correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
That's the process. And every claim that has that diagnosis has to be corrected. It's not just one, right? So if you have five claims, not you know, a lot of them don't. A lot of them are very obvious. You know, oopses.
Got
I'm going to call them oopses. Okay.
Got it. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Hi, I had a question.
Oh, this is going to have to be our last question because we are at 1 o'clock, so we'll take one more question. Go ahead.
Okay. I am calling about the wellness and the preventative visit together.
Go ahead.
So you don't recommend it being billed together. If the doctor submits it as that, should we go ahead and change it, or will the claim be denied?
My understanding is Highmark will not pay for that preventive part, that preventive visit, and that may not be in your best interest.
Okay.
So you may want to bring that up with your provider that you cannot put two preventive visits on the same claim. They are very similar. If you look at the language behind a preventive physical exam and an annual wellness visit, it does go through everything that an annual wellness visit does on top besides the physical part. So you're probably better off, and I'm just, I can't advise, you understand, I could just, you know, you'll have to have a discussion, but, you know, take a close look at it because you can get money for a physical exam, you know, the 2-2 series and an annual wellness visit if you apply the modifier to the 2-2, you know, 9-2-2, or the 9-9-2, I think it is, 9-9-2. If, you know, those are regular, you know, E&M codes for established and new patients that say, hey, I've had an outpatient visit, I've done a detailed exam, I've done a detailed history, you know, or whatever, you know, or a problem focus, whatever. It depends on that situation. But, you know, Medicare doesn't pay at all for the preventive exams, just to throw that out there. But Highmark won't pay for both at the same time.
Okay, so
take that under advisement. That's the best I can tell you.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. Hey, if you do have a question, you can get in touch with your clinical transformation consultant or your provider relations representative if you do have an additional question. Also, I'd like to remind everybody, we do have another session on Thursday, I believe it is, the 25th at noon. Is that correct, Leslie?
Thursday at noon?
That is correct? Okay. So if you have a colleague that missed it or anything like that, we are going to use the same login information that you got today. So I do want to thank everybody for their participation, and this recording will be available on the Provider Resource Center in about a week. Thanks, everybody, for your time and attention.